entire box of cards into a puddle.
I don't think there's anybody more naturally gifted at the game.
Opportunity to bicker with each other over drinks at the end of a random calendar year.
I think he's done more to bring players into the game than probably anybody else.
Take you back to the very, very beginnings when you were in that spot.
We're that old married couple that it has matching sweaters on.
I went from looking at a traditionalist painting to looking at a Salvador Dali.
The face, the voice, the heart of Magic the Gathering.
So you are our favorite caboose. Oh, you merry elf. I'm Sean Seacrease, along with two of the jolliest this side of the Nut House, Ryan Tibbetts and Matt Hurley. Coming up this evening on Tryhards, this is going to be our Christmas party. And we're going to do the greatest thing you can do when you host a Christmas party, give away your gifts to your guests, or in this case, those of you who have taken time to listen to the cast. We'll talk about the World Magic Cup. We're going to have our end of the year holiday list as well. In the past, we've talked about best planeswalkers, best lands. We're going to do something a little bit different this time around, but it's going to be a lot of fun. We hope you enjoy it and your holidays too this week with Tryhards. Guys, what are you drinking as we get started? I know thematically it would call for eggnog, but I'm just going with something else. Brian, what do you got with you in the empty house?
Something pretty amazing. I've been saving this for quite some time for this special holiday occasion, of course, from the New Glarus Brewing Company in the great state that I will soon be inhabiting of Wisconsin. Absolution Dark Belgian Ale. They kind of let people roam free on their brewing like once a year at New Glarus, and they came up with this. So it's definitely a Belgian ale, but it's got some Wisconsin type style to it. It's got some Santiam Chinook hops, and then they put a little bit of lactose in there, so it's got that kind of really velvety mouthfeel. It's kind of, you know, real smooth. So yeah, it's really, really good. So here's to everyone out there, wishing you all a very, very fond end of 2018, and here's to the best of 2019.
Well, while you go north, I'm going south. The girlfriend was in Dallas over the weekend, and she was pointed to a local brewery called Deep Elam. And their Deep Elam IPA is what she brought back. It is spicy, but it is also less than bold. It's more of a muted spicy. So that's what we're enjoying here in headquarters for this episode of Tryhards. Matt, what do you got in the glass tonight?
I actually was in Cincinnati last week for some sales meetings, and I got to go to Mad Tree Brewing. So I have some psychopathy I picked up there. They had a very deep line of on tap beers that you typically can't get in cans or bottles.
Mad Tree, if you're ever in the Queen City, I'd recommend checking it out, and I think Matt does too. Guys, what magic did you play this week? Matt, you were busy trying to save your job. Okay, it might not have been that important, but you were very busy with work heading toward the end of the year. You also were just coming off SCG Con. Did your life allow you to play any cards?
I got to play a little bit of Ultimate Masters on Friday nights. It is as fun as I remember it from SCG Con. So drafted some blue-green ramp style, big creature. Thought it was pretty good until I hit the guy who had not one, not two, but three of the Tormenting Worm, which is the 4/4 trample that has madness for three mana. He had a lot of madness. He had like three Fiery Tempers. The thing that you discard a card and you get like a 1 or 3/1 elemental and exile it at the end of turn. So I got beat out first round, but I did get to spend a lot of money on the Ultimate Masters box toppers. So there was always that good side of it.
We got a picture unsolicited of Matt saying just fell into these. And it was six Ultimate Masters box toppers. I have a feeling they may come up in the finance talk in the pretty near future here on Tryhards. Brian, you were busy packing up an entire house and readying for your family's move. Did you get to play any Magic?
No, not a lick. I packed up all my cards very safe and sound, however, and made sure that they're all cuddled snug in their boxes before they made the trip north. And by all accounts from the wife, they unpacked today and nary a piece of cardboard was bent. So very happy about that.
Well, it sounds like your cardboard traveler is safer than Matt's. I remember Matt buying, what was it, about a C-notes worth of cardboard when you were here in Quincy, and then you fell into a puddle as soon as you left the shop with it?
I don't like to talk about that. It was exactly $100. I was carrying them out, and I slipped on some ice and dropped the entire box of cards into a puddle.
Oh, boy. That stinks.
One of the stories that lives on in perpetuity around Quincy Magic, is that story of Matt doing just that. For myself, very busy weekend, got to play around a little bit on Arena, had some fun there. They now have the ranked ladder that they're going to use as their feeder program for Arena into the Mythic Championships. So got started playing around with that. It is exactly what you would think. It's very quick to ascend through the beginning levels of bronze and silver, and then your progress slows exponentially once you get into the sort of middle ranks to make sure that you're putting in your time and you actually have to win quite a fair number of games. But I think it's going to be interesting to see how that new aspect of Arena is both received and utilized by the community at large. Something we'll be breaking down once Wizards lays out more of how they're going to make that transition into the Mythic Championships, how many they'll be taking, and what exactly the requirements will be. I'm sure that'll be coming up probably first quarter. Guys, the World Magic Cup was this weekend, and if you're really paying close attention to tryhards, you know this would normally be the spot where we do our Patreon raffle. Well, we're going to do something special tonight since it's the Christmas celebration edition. We're going to do more than one raffle, and we're going to do it when we throw our little cast Christmas party coming up in just a few minutes. Guys, thoughts on the World Cup and the fallout? France knocks off Israel with it being a modified standard. Things weren't always top of the line, but it seems like teams from all over the world agreed on some of the top strategies when you can't share cards. Golgari, is it Drake's, Jeskai Control, some flavor of white-based aggro. That seemed to be the calling card for most of the teams. France takes down their second title in 5 years. Seth Manfield leads the U.S. to another disappointing finish. Brian, was there anything that stood out to you from this year's, and maybe the last, although I don't think that's going to be for good, World Cup?
The fact that all of the pictures from that just made me laugh. All of the goofy pictures you see, it was more like a World Cup atmosphere. The Mexican team kind of dressed in their sombreros and their bandoliers. All of the countries were basically like in rare form trying to be as country-esque as they could possibly be, except for the Norwegians, because, you know, that's just how they are. It seemed like there was so much fun around this, and it's really sad to see, because I think it's just that spirit of the World Magic Cup that's just kind of going to be going away. But congrats to the French. I didn't see anything that was overly, I guess, that stood out to me. I think they probably just played the best. I thought the Jeskai Control list that they ran seemed really, really strong. It seemed to be pared down a little bit, not all in on some of the higher casting cost cards. So that probably put them a little bit, gave them a greater edge in some of the matchups. This just goes to show you that there's a lot of depths and a lot of countries of great players. So congrats to all who played in there.
I thought it was interesting that the Mexican team actually grew those mustaches out themselves. Those were in no way costumes that they were sporting during the tournament. Matt, if you're going to stay true to your recent roots, I think there is a deck that I thought stood out that you might be on my wavelength with. Some of the teams showed up with Chromatic Black. It was basically mono black control with Treasure Map and Chromatic Lantern to fuel some top end alternate possibilities. How about Carnage Tyrants coming out of a mono black deck, utilizing Mastermind's Acquisition to go into your sideboard and get Cleansing Nova, playing Demon Lord Belzenlok, you know, on purpose, or even a sideboard Zakama out of a mono black land base. This one to me seems interesting, and if the format has slowed to a point where you can leverage all the potential of Mastermind's Acquisition, there might be something going on here. Matt, were you intrigued by this deck at all, or what else did you see that you thought stood out?
I've seen the deck before and played it just a hair on Arena. I gotta say, I do like the deck. I just think it's one of those decks that a lot of times just loses to itself. Kind of draw the wrong half of your deck. You know, you don't get the Chromatic Lanterns that you need to cast your cards, or the Mastermind Acquisitions type of thing. So it's one of those decks that makes me super nervous. But I do think, especially with Orzhov coming out next year, that I do really think there's some legs to it somewhere.
Yeah, that's what was interesting to me. We're going to get Orzhov. We're going to get Rakdos. And we know that there are going to be intriguing options in those two, whether it's protection options, some sort of card draw options, certainly with Rakdos, carnage options. We already have the Tyrants. We may end up with the options Brian, was there any sort of technology that you noticed over the weekend that you think is survivable, whether in whole or just a piece of, once we go back to a full standard format and we can all use whatever cards we want?
Nothing really, no. I have to say that I was a little lax on watching coverage, but there was nothing that really jumped out to me. I'm glad that you guys are up on this, because I think you're pulling up the caboose of me right here. The World Magic Cup, I thought, was more of a, not a deck building tournament, but more of like a country for pride kind of thing. So I didn't see any new tech that I would say is going forward, but I hope that people keep brewing and you know, as things come forward, that's just the way to, like, a great jumping off spot for new sets and new archetypes.
I know exactly what you're thinking. We need a Patreon poll to figure out who would be our caboose, but there is no doubt Brian's caboose is the best caboose on this podcast. So you are our favorite caboose, no matter how that ends up turning out.
I am the oldest caboose on the podcast, too. I just want that to be known.
Which is a little bit embarrassing for Matt and I, considering that, as I said, it's the best one, and it's also the oldest one. But maybe you know, because it's the first one, it was the mold maker. I don't know how much further we can stretch this. And you can tell that we've all already started partying for the Christmas show with how this is taking a turn right here. One of the other cool things that wasn't nearly as competitive as the World Magic Cup, but I thought was a very cool rollout and a first-time showcase, WotC got together with some of their Twitch streamers and helped bring together a Twitch Rivals event this week. I got to watch just a little bit of this. Professor Knox was playing Ali Antrazi, and it was a very kind of cool little matchup. They had a number of streamers, more than I thought they would get on board with this out of the gate, who were playing against each other in various rounds and then switching off. The whole thing had to be fairly complicated behind the scenes, and it seemed like it was flowing very smoothly. So kudos to whoever sort of organized this event from the get-go. Matt, we always talk about it's always time to promote the game. Did you get to see any of the Rivals event on Twitch, and did you like what it sort of brought to the community as a platform, as a vibe, and as a showcase of the new arena format?
I do like what they did with it. Fantastic idea. You're right, Sean, there was a lot of behind the scenes that went on with it, and I think one of the issues was that they kind of had to fake a best of three, challenge each other, and then have their deck list published so that they could have that best of three. And the finals was actually decided because somebody over sideboarded what was not in their sideboard. People in chat noticed. It actually went to a judge. It got a magic judge to weigh in, and it had to go all the way to, you know, basically they had to stop streaming it, and they had to figure out what to do, and they gave the guy game loss. It was real interesting, and I think it kind of showed the biggest weakness of Arena, and that is no best of three in ranked ladders. But moving forward, I hope we do a lot more of these.
I think that's an easy coding thing to fix. Brian and I have played the direct challenge just to make sure it worked. And having an option to either play one game or best of three doesn't seem like the Mount Everest of coding work. So I would have to think that's going to be coming rather soon. They don't have to use it in one of their formats that helps them decide their mythic participants if they want it to be all single game based. But certainly, an option for players who would want to do that, it seems like an easy fix to me, and something that's going to make a large portion of the participants happy.
This was actually part of Twitch Rivals. This was not sponsored in any way by Wizards, other than Wizards partnering with Twitch to have these tournaments there. So for everything I see came out of Twitch's pocket. And Twitch Rivals is typically a channel that does like PUBG, Fortnite, Hearthstone, CSGO, a lot of those other big competitive games. So this is part of that partnership versus an actual support by Wizards.
Matt, I'm glad you brought that up, because in the earth-shaking announcement in which Wizards gave us some details of the new reality, they mentioned that part of their $10 million Magic budget for the upcoming year was for, quote, partners events. Most of us at the time thought that meant they were going to be working out an increased support with Channel Fireball on the GP circuit. Do you think that this is what we're going to see more of, that that's part of the budget that they're going to use to help stream partners or other non-paper Magic partners put on these kinds of events?
I hope this is more of what we see. I know Caleb took it down. I think he said he won $3,000 for the first place. it brought in a lot of regular Magic people and Twitch streamers, and it also brought in some non-Magic people as well. Some people who just play, I wouldn't call it casually, but are like semi-sponsored, like Filthy Robots. Yeah, I mean, I hope we see a lot more of these, because on a Tuesday afternoon, we record this on Wednesday this week, but on Tuesday afternoon, they had something like 12,000 viewers, something along that line, and that's just ridiculous.
$3,000 for a day of playing from the comfort of your own home. It's almost like you teach Latin classes online. Yeah, you know, that's the kind of compensation and comfort one can look forward to. At least if it turns out to be that way, we'll have a professional on one front here on the cast to fill us in on that. I know I've got my Santa hat on. I brought up my concrete statue of Aloysius, the party reindeer that we have on display on our fireplace year round. Brian, do you have any party gear that you're putting on or getting out?
There's a, what do I have? Like, it's one of those like accordion style animals that were made by some kindergartner or first grader a long time ago. Clara made this reindeer, kind of like an accordion reindeer. And I have it like posted right above the computer right here. It's got kind of like misshapen horns and the nose is kind of fallen off and things, but, the spirit is still there. So, I will call upon it as we gift our presence to the world.
That's a good totem animal for you this evening. Matt, are you just taking your moose mug and dipping it back into the eggnog, or you got something a little bit more high-end going on?
We somehow stumbled into matching ugly sweaters that were from Yingling. Lauren picked up two of them from her work as favors from the local distributor. We've been going around the last couple days, I should say last couple days, about the last week, and matching sweaters. So we're that old married couple that it has matching sweaters on when they go to, like, Christmas, Christmas festivals and stuff like that.
Of course you guys are.
That is,
of course you are.
Absolutely perfect. What do you say we start this Tryhards Christmas party with a fun party game? Years ago, we started this and we did the first ever holiday lists, the top 25 planeswalkers of all time. Little did we know that that was a long list and it was a lot to chew on. The next year, we cut it down to our top 20 lands of all time. And this year, we're going to cut it down to 4. That's how lazy we're feeling this year. We're going to make this a little bit different composition, though. Top lists are all the rage. But in the U.S., we have something that is only for the truly elite, Mount Rushmore. This is a granite-carved monument to what was believed to be the 4 greatest presidents by the carver in the Black Hills of South Dakota. Some would say even the Badlands. If I can tap Mount Rushmore for black or red, I'll be very, very happy. What it comes down to is that these are the 4 greatest. Now, greatest is open to each of our interpretation. Could be players, could be a game designer, could be anybody that we think we'd like to see on our own Mount Rushmore. Now, in order to free up a slot and have a little bit more controversy, all 3 of us agreed that there is a higher plane for Dr. Garfield, who created the game and thus gave us this opportunity to bicker with each other over drinks at the end of a random calendar year. So without him, none of this would be possible. He belongs on a higher level than that. So Dr. Garfield, off limits, don't at me, because this is something that would have just been essentially your top 3 if we had allowed that. So with that in mind, Matt, take us through your list and explain why you chose the faces you did to enshrine them for all time.
First is a person, and it's somebody I could listen to.
Did you
honestly
just say first is
talk
a person?
The first is a person. I'm so happy it's a person. Mm,
me too.
He's a person that I could listen to, and I do listen to his podcast when they come out, and I could listen to him talk sports at a depth that I am not familiar with, but he has such a, I will call it a dry humor, that I do think he's a gym for the game, and that's Brian David Marshall. I think he can relate, you know, kind of the Magic persona to just the normal world. If there was a 4th person for the tryhards, I could say, hey, who's that person? I think BDM would be like the person we should pick. He's everything that the Magic community needs, and he can relate just in a different way.
He's right now getting text messages that he has no idea who we are, and they're like, hey, you just got included as the 4th tryhard.
Do you guys disagree with me on that? I mean, could you imagine like having him as a cast member being able to, you know, have the conversation flow, and he said got such a nerdy knowledge as well. That's the other thing.
The only thing that I'm going to take umbrage there is I think that he has achieved a level of relevant success and notoriety that would rule him out of this podcast.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. He's way above our level. But in my thinking, Hurley, he's just outside that top four for me. Continue on with your other three, because I'm fascinated to find out who your other three paragons of the Magic community are.
So my second person, and this is probably one that probably all three of us are going to pick. He's on another level, and his intelligence is just completely beyond me. And I love watching him, and he can just pick up the game after not playing for months and still do well at a pro tour, and that's John Finkel. I think Finkel deserves a spot here, not only because of his play, because of his Hall of Fame status and, you know, being one of the best players of all time. Also, he does a lot for the community in the sense of, like, he set up the, I believe it was the Gamers First scholarship, and he just does a whole crap ton that he doesn't have to do, but he does. Another person who I think deserves it, I don't mean this in a mean way, but I don't think he deserves it yet, but his face belongs up there. And this is truly for his deck brewing, his communication with the community, his defense of kind of the silent majority, I'll call him, is Jerry Thompson. I think we'll go look back in 3, 4, 5 years. And if you don't already consider him one of the best in the game, we're going to look back and we're just going to say, how was this guy just not just tearing everything up, everything he touched? You know, how was it not just turning to gold? I'm a huge fan of Jerry T. Amazing brewer, amazing player. And I think he does a lot for the community as well. My final one, again, I think I'm picking from the probably from the easy barrel here, but LSV. I mean, LSV is LSV. You know, that's all you got to say about him. He is bananas. Like, everything he does is fantastic. And his terrible puns always add another level to the game as well. You know, they're really bad. And his feud with Paul Cheon always makes me chuckle. One of the greatest, if not top three, definitely top five, to play the game, to comment on the game. I wouldn't be surprised if the game is in, you know, still deeply around in 10 years, you know, we still have the level of players we do, that he's not helping to design the game in one way or another.
You know, that's interesting, because he is somebody that you can revere his work as a player and you can revere his work in the booth. And he almost seems to earn it on two separate fronts. BDM, Jerry T, the GOAT, John Finkel, and LSV, Matt's Mount Rushmore of Magic. Brian, take us on a tour through the faces you would carve into granite.
The first one I'm going to put on there is the German juggernaut, the king of the Grand Prix, 5-time Pro Tour title winner, Kai Budde. Unbelievable run, kind of semi-retired. I don't think anyone's going to reach that 5 Pro Tour title ever again. It just seems pretty much out of reach, but he did it, and there was nobody better in the early 2000s. Second person I would put on the Mount Rushmore would be Mauro himself, head designer, the face, the voice, the heart of Magic the Gathering, somebody who used to be a showrunner for the Roseanne TV show, who got his start, you know, basically writing the puzzles for the Duelist magazine, and just kind of worked his way up because they realized just what a force they had in him. This statistic just boggles my mind. He has designed at least one card for every set since Alliances in 1995. That, to me, says right there the staying power of somebody. He is the heart of the game, because what we're playing with is all from his heart, his mind, the collaboration, of course, with the team of designers and things, but I think we've got to put Mauro on there. The other one that I would put on there is the crossover with Hurley, is LSV. Skill level alone, I don't think there's anybody more naturally gifted at the game than LSV. It just seems like he's the guy who, in a way that is not like any other, can pick up the game, understand lines, understand mechanics so easily, so fluidly. It's pretty impressive. But not just that, he's a content provider, he's a commentator, and is becoming almost of a Mauro-level status. He's become synonymous with the game, and I think that's something to his benefit, LSV. And then the fourth one I would put up here is a little bit cheating, I have to say, but I still think it's very, very important. I'm kind of putting the women of Magic on here, and I think of people like J.D. Komplarins, Emma Handy, Elaine Bergeau, those who are kind of taking the cause of kind of equalizing some things out of here. So would I have like one head with all three of them on there? No, but I would say that there's got to be some kind of symbol of the women of Magic kind of taking this to the next level and making sure that everyone is available to play this game. Kai Booty, Mark Rosewater, LSV, and the women of Magic the Gathering.
Very cool foursome. And thinking outside the box, yes, there has to be a symbol of some sort in a game that's all about symbols where you could make that happen for one of your Mount Rushmore heads. Very cool. I like the list. As for myself, we're going to have some overlap, as we probably thought we would. But it's not going to be on the one guy that maybe you guys thought it would be. My list includes Kai. You can't deny his greatness. He is the gold standard for information technology development in an era before it was widely available. And if you want to give me just a pile of your old Inquest and Duelist magazines so I can relive that era, I would love to just bathe in that nostalgia for a weekend and and have fun with it. That was the era in which, you know, he was really dominating. And then the man who is considered the greatest of all time, they broke that lock with Kai, it seems, a little while ago, and that's John Finkel. Matt outlined all that he does for the game, the success that he has had playing the cards, and what he does sort of behind the scenes to improve the lot of gamers, of nerds, of passionate Magic players sort of everywhere. Finkel is my second one onto that mountain. Now, here's where I'm gonna zig. There is somebody who I think was important to the game, and he in some ways represents a group, Brian, much like you were talking about finding a way to represent the women of Magic. There was a time in Magic's history when it was the SEC. If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. And he came in and he helped to clean that up, and that is Sheldon Mennery. He became the face for the judging program and an era of judges where they really went the extra mile to help root that out of the game. And I think he is deserving in and of the accolade himself, but he also represents a bigger group. Sheldon Mennery for me. And you guys knew that I would have a broadcaster, right? Because that's what I'm going to do. But this isn't the one that I think you might think that I'd pick, because he is my favorite person to listen to. And he's someone who approaches it with his own sort of dry humor, his willingness to mix it up, his willingness to abstain, his understanding of game systems, Patrick Sullivan. He made his bones on the SCG Tour, and he still does, I think, the best color commentary work that there is. He is my guy to represent the media industry of Magic, whether it is the writers, whether it's the VOD producers, the VOD creators, the podcasters, the commentators. Patrick Sullivan is the one that I put up there to represent that wing of the game. Finkel, Kai, Sheldon Mennery, and Patrick Sullivan going to be my big four.
Sean, I got to say, that's really interesting. And I'll tell the both of you the honest truth about Kai. I quit before the Pro Tours really became a well-broadcasted thing, because I quit in like 97, 98. I never really saw Kai coming back at Zendikar. I never saw Kai play. I knew of him. I've obviously read a lot about him, but I look at that as, I wouldn't say a nostalgia pick as much as I think I'm like, you know, how would he do in today's environment? And I still think he would do amazing. Don't get me wrong, but I think Finkel would overtake him. I mean, that was my honest truth on that one.
Right. No. It's one of those things where it's like people, they always ask me like, who are the best second baseman of all time, so to speak? Well, you can't just go from the time you're alive kind of thing or when you've watched the game. So you kind of have to dig back in history. And I think the more I read about Kai, the more he's impressive to me with what he did in the scope of the players that he was around. I understand that Magic was not nearly as popular then as it is now. And you're probably right. Finkel may have overtaken him, but to still get five titles.
Oh, yeah.
Is just unbelievable. So I think we have to look at the numbers and just be like, yep, that's what it is. It's kind of fun to kind of look back in the Magic history and kind of see, oh, who are these players that, you know, were something to the game? If you mention to like young players, people like Gabriel Nassif, would they really know who that is? that was a name that was synonymous with success, what, 5-6 years ago? But how quickly we move on from those people to the Brad Nelsons, the Jerry T's, the Lee Tishians of today, that's who people know now. We can't forget about the people who came before us. So this was actually a fun exercise to kind of go through and be like, okay, if I only had four, this has got to be an important four.
Well, and I'm going to tell you why Kai stands out in my mind. He is indelibly linked with a breakthrough moment of myself and Magic. Up until I read about this happening, I only thought about the game in terms of I'm trying to get my opponent dead, quote unquote, with my cards. I can use some instants, I can use some creatures, but the word combo didn't really occur to me until I read about Illusions of Grandeur donate. And yep. That was the moment that is indelibly marked on my mind when my perspective on the game just was completely warped. It was like I went from looking at a traditionalist painting to looking at a Salvador Dali painting at that point. Like everything just melted and warped, and I went,
this game is, Hurley, I want you to, can you pinpoint the time when you heard about or read about or was introduced to your first, like, combo deck, Prosper Bloom?
I was going to say, the first one was the one we played together, which was Prosper Bloom.
I was just like, oh my God, this is like a totally different way of just like swing with creatures to try to trample your opponent down to zero.
First time I had read about them, but the first one was really probably Elf Ball with Craterhoof.
Sure.
First one I actively played, and that was the first one that I read some basics about it, and I'm like, why are we not mixing these cards in here? And made realistic, not just picked it up and played it, made some realistic changes to it. And that's when I kind of started to learn about Storm and Legacy as well, and those other cards. So, I mean, I have like that huge knowledge gap there, but, you know, when I quit, the combo was, oh yeah, I chopped down my Taiga to make mana to push out a Shivan Dragon. That was what I was doing.
Orcish Lumberjack. Oh, yeah. That one? Yeah, I love that deck. That was freaking sweet.
There is something that will occur to people. Well, everybody knew about the first combo, Channel Fireball. Well, sure, but you're talking about the game on a deeper level when you're talking about something like Illusions Donate or Tricks or something along those lines. And yes, my inclusion of Sheldon Mennery and Patrick Sullivan was essentially me opening the gate to a proxy fight over the Hall of Fame conversation. So
I will say this, not that Sheldon Mennery ever will listen to this cast. You just look at his commander as what he's done for commander. I think he's done more to bring players into the game than probably anybody else in the game.
I learned a lot from you guys and your Mount Rushmore list. If you have a list, why don't you share it with us? TheTryHards3@gmail.com. If we get some real interesting ones, maybe we'll share some of those here on the cast. Well, a party isn't a party unless there are party gifts. And we were scheduled to do a Patreon raffle giveaway this week. Unfortunately, we're not going to be able to do it. Well, I should say we're not going to be able to do just one. We've decided to quintuple down and make this a real Christmas party. Matt, Brian, and myself have each come up with a cool card that we would like to raffle off. We do have the regularly scheduled raffle of a GP land pack, and we have a special surprise grand finale gift to get to you. Without further ado, let's go ahead and start unwrapping some of our gifts that we're going to give to you. Let's start with the party gifts. Matt, tell us what you've got up, and then we'll pick a number out of the TryHards randomizer. 49 eligibles through both Patreon and Twitter for the Christmas party. What are you putting up, Matt?
Probably one of my favorite cards. Not of all time, but like just I love the card, and I love the style of it, and I love the way it looks in foil. But it's a Erebos God of the Dead foil from whatever terrible set that was during Theros.
I think it was just Theros, maybe not.
I think it was just Theros.
All right. We'll see who is going to end up with Foil Erebos, a number 1 through 49. And no, you're not going to be able to win twice if we pull your name. We will scratch you from the list. Here we go, Matt. 23.
Bert Wilson, actually a $5 patron. It looks like Bert has been a member for just about 3 months. So we will shout out a message to Bert and get his information.
Congratulations, Bert. Foil Erebos, God of the Dead, coming your way. Brian, what gift are you going to unwrap?
One of the cards that I have had for quite some time here that I've kept in pristine condition, and I think that's one of the beauties of it, that the corners are sharp, the white is extremely glaring. This is my revised Vesuvan Doppelganger, a card that I used to play with, not this version, but a card I used to play with back in the day. I used to just absolutely love this card and make it copy all kinds of things.
Our tryhards number randomizer is going to be 13. Triskaidekaphobia, 13.
Victor Bernhard.
Oh my god, seriously?
Yep.
Victor, I will be sending you yet another package from the States and spending $29,000 to mail it to you.
Oh, I am not making this up. I promise you. That is
awesome.
That guy has gotten more cards from my personal collection. I feel like I've got like a European doppelganger, so this is fitting.
I hope Victor makes it to a USGP that we just happen to be there. You need to sign every single one of those 18 cards you're sending.
Yes, I do.
One more to give away. This is an indicator of the kind of person that I am. If I had the Ring of Wishes, my first wish would be for more wishes. So what am I going to give you but a present that keeps giving you presents? A foil Twilight Prophet. I've been having so much fun with this since it dropped, I believe, in Rivals of Ixalan. A Bob that both draws you extra cards and kills your opponent at the same time, as well as being a 2/4 flyer. I don't think you could ask for much more in life. A foil Twilight Prophet. Matt, here we go. We've already eliminated 23 and 13. Number randomizer, 28. 28.
Jarrant Owen. I know Jarrant's won. He's been a member for, looks like, just a hair over or hair under 2 years. So congratulations, Jarrant.
Jarrant Owen, the gift that keeps on giving. Twilight Prophet coming your way. Congratulations. We have two more left to go. Our regularly scheduled GP Land Pack. I believe this is the last one that we have left from GP Minnesota this summer. Go ahead and dive in with the virtual arm. Pull out a virtual apple. And that apple's number is 34.
This one's Michael Warren. Another one that I think is... one, and it looks like Michael's been a $5 patron for quite a few months.
Well, congratulations, Michael. So we have Jarrett, Burt, Victor, and Michael who have already won, and we're including both our eligibles from our Patreon page and everyone who registered via the hashtag available on Twitter. And we've got one more gift to give out here this evening on Try Hards. We all got together and decided, let's do something cool. Let's do something together as a cast. So each of the guys is going to mention what they're throwing in. This is going to be sort of the grand prize, if you will. We've got a Try Hard playmat that's going to be included. And, Brian, what are you throwing in as our big Christmas bonus?
I'm throwing in a gently played Beta Resurrection, a card that I've loved the card Resurrections ever since it was printed. Got my hands on this kind of slightly played, maybe moderately played, Beta version, but the black border is absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, these cards are going to be cards that are meaningful to us that we want to share with you. Mine is from a stack that I had. This stack has dwindled intentionally over the years. Once I found these and really noticed how cool they were, I got a stack of them. Back in the day, they were only a couple of bucks, and I would hand them out to various people. If I had a great match or got to know somebody, it was kind of my calling card, my way to spread something that I thought was cool around the game of Magic. This is a DCI Legends membership counterspell. If you're thinking, well, what does that look like? It's the art that they used for the Judge promo. This is where they got the art for the foil Judge promo. This is not a foil, but it is still very cool. I still have a set that whenever I play Counterspell, these come out of the vault. Well, Matt went totally from the heart. What are you throwing in?
Oh, I've got some nonsense here for you. First off, one of my favorite cards to play in Commander when I do play, and that's a foil Crush of Tentacles. You might remember this beast. It's kind of, return all non-land permanents to their owner's hand, and if you pay the surge cost, make an 8/8 octopus. I love doing upheavals style effects in EDH, and I'm throwing in a bonus one, and that bonus one is one of the worst cards that I look at, and I'm like, how did they print this? And it's so awful, a 7th edition foil Vigilant Drake, which may be worth money in the future, and this thing has been in my collection forever, and it's awful. Like, I'm like, it's a Vigilant Drake, you should have Vigilant. Oh no, it costs 4 mana to have pseudo Vigilance. Congratulations on the Vigilant Drake, because that's just a ridiculous card.
Brian, did Matt get confused and think this was a white elephant gift?
something like that, because I feel like, hey, if the patrons want to, like, you know, swap amongst themselves or email each other and try to trade, great, good for them, kudos. Whatever Matt gives you, that's what you're getting.
I think Victor might find it tough to find a dance partner, but...
Oh, God.
Be that as it may. All right, here we go. Matt's offering plus Brian's Beta Resurrection, my DCI Legends counterspell, and an original first run Tryhards playmat. Matt, number 7.
Good friend of the show, Danny Lim.
Sweet.
I have traded many a card with him when I have played in Galesburg. He has been supporting the cast for quite some time. Danny, congratulations. Everyone who won, thank you. We will get these gifts out to you. Jarrett, Bert, Victor, Michael, and Danny, thank you so much for supporting the show over the years, and hopefully you and yours have a great holiday end of the year. That's the holiday Christmas party. Some of us are a little wobbly, but we'll try and stagger through the rest of the show here this evening. It would normally be time to get in the elevator, but the elevator's broken. We're going to go for a magical sleigh ride. See if we're going to be worth more when we get off than when we started. Matt, what are you putting in the big red bag tonight?
My card this week is Deep Glow Skate. This is a 5-mana 3/3 that when it ETBs, double the number of each kind of counter on any number of target permanents. We've already seen a card that wins the game if it has 20 or more counters on it in the Simic colors. This card is only printed in Commander, fairly low price, all the way down to about $3. These are a card that's just going to go up and up and up. Deep Glow Skate is just a ridiculously good card in Commander for blue, and you should pick them up under $6 and down towards the $3 if you can get them.
Everybody off, everybody back on, but this time... at your own risk. Yes, this wild sleigh ride continues. He would normally be our brewmaster, but tonight we've handed him the reins to the sleigh. Brian, are you ready to go on a wild ride?
Oh, I hope everybody's ready to go on a wild ride tonight, because I have chosen something quite special. For those of you who don't know, Wizards puts out a Happy Holidays card every single year, and it's something a little goofy, a little fun, maybe a little bit unconventional. They've come up with some gems over the years, and the one from 2015 is the focus of 3 Minutes to Brew this evening. It's a sorcery, red, one red and one, called Goblin Sleigh Ride. Target creature you control climbs onto Goblin Sleigh Ride. You slide them on their merry way. Yes, I am reading from the actual card text. If the creature stayed on, it deals damage equal to its toughness to each other creature touched during the slide. Gentlemen, could you see this happening in any Commander game? Could you see this happening in, let's say, Tiny Leaders with Goblin Sleigh Ride? Hurley, what about you?
So, obviously, this is a Commander card. They played around with making the silver-bordered cards legal, and we've played with them before in, like, the cube. One of my favorite things to do is a friend of mine has a powered cube, and I always have these ridiculous dexterity cards in my bag. Not necessarily a Goblin Sleigh Ride, but like just some of the nonsense ones. And I'm like, hey, I'm going to put this in the cube. And he's like, you put that in the cube, I'll kill you. Because he has $10,000 cards in there. You know, if anybody allows the silver bordered, these are great in Commander. They add a ton of fun to it. Feats of dexterity missing from the current cards. I kind of miss them. I miss the Chaos Orbs. I miss, you know, all that nonsense, because it was just fun nonsense. That's where you have to keep it. I mean, you can't reintegrate any type of feat of dexterity into these magic as a whole. You just have to keep it in Commander. I'll put a giant crater hoof or a Kozilek on a Goblin Sleigh Ride any day and slide it across the table.
That sounds awesome. Sean, what about you? What creature would you want to attach to Goblin Sleigh Ride, and in what format?
I think there's only one answer to this, and this is the card that Black Red Reanimator wants in Legacy, because you don't have to tap the creature, and it also does not invalidate its attack turn. You reanimate Gristlebrand, put him on the Goblin Sleigh Ride, slide him across the board. He's got lifelink for all the damage he's going to bust out. Then you draw the extra cards, rinse and repeat. Once he is eligible to attack, Gristlebrand attacks anyway. So I think Goblin Sleigh Ride plus Gristlebrand is the combo that I'm looking forward to.
I think you guys are thinking about this all the wrong way. I think you've got to look at something with a big butt on it, because it's the creature deals damage equal to its toughness. So you've got to look at something with a big butt.
Seven's so, big, man. Seven's big.
I'm not saying that Black Red Reanimator isn't big, but I think you've got to be thinking a little bit bigger. Hey, you've got Wall of Reverence out there. You've got all kinds of things. If you can animate the wall to attack, great. If not, just put it on the sleigh ride and it can attack. It doesn't say there's any problems with that. So what about a wall attacking on the Goblin Sleigh Ride? Goblin Sleigh Ride opens up all kinds of deck brewing possibilities. Have fun with that.
Ever needed your Wall of Denial to take out opposing creatures?
Yes.
Goblin Sleigh Ride could make that happen. Our 3 minutes to brew card tonight on the holiday edition of Tryhards. Guys, usually we ask each week what you did to get better in Magic. I'm going to open it up a little bit more. What did you do this year that stood out to you, whether it was a moment, whether it was an experiment you embarked on, whether it was a dedication to improving your game? What did you do this year that you think made you better at Magic? Brian, I'll start with you.
It's a great question, and I don't know if I actually succeeded at this, but with all the work we did last fall in, or actually I would say in 2017, there was a big push by the Tryhards. We had our January GP in Louisville, where we kind of did the bug deck, our bug Leovold deck that it didn't go so well. It went really well for Reed Duke, that kind of thing, working on something together. We went to Pittsburgh in the fall. We each had kind of our own decks, and it was great to kind of build towards something. This year, it didn't really work out for me to kind of build towards something. I was just kind of playing what I had, wasn't playing a ton of Magic just because of various other things. I think what I have in 2018 is I want to be a resource for people to get into the game. And that's one thing that I did do this year. It wasn't on a competitive level, but it was just more of a introducing people to the game. And that's one of the things I'm proudest of. The younger people knowing kind of how to introduce them to the game. If it's nothing other than just the starter decks and the intro decks, it's really, really fun to play those with someone who doesn't know the game, because it takes you back to the very, very beginnings when you were in that spot. And there's a simplicity to it, I think, that could benefit everybody. So I'm hoping to continue to do that. And obviously in 2019, I look forward to learning a new Magic community in Appleton, Wisconsin, where I'm headed, and to see what's in store for me up there.
For myself, it was the embracing of the Black Hat, not as a villain, so to speak, but as a nemesis that people wanted to face off against in their playtesting. Whether it was being asked to adopt humans in Modern or to adopt Storm in Legacy so that my playtest partners could have those reps, it taught me a lot about the game and introduced me to angles of the game that I either thought would be unfun, not my style, not appropriate angles to take on the metagame, and helped me open up my own range of what I feel comfortable with. So if you're willing to sort of put down preconceived notions or stop making every playtesting session about just what's going to work for your pet deck, you can expand your horizons a little bit, and you're going to learn something about the game, you're going to learn something about yourself, and you're going to improve on some of your own skills in the game. That's what I did, I think, to get better at Magic this year. Matt? What about you? You ended with SCG Con and you're running the Invitational.
Honestly, I think a big portion of it is playing more Standard. You know, this is the first Standard format I've really felt like, oh, this is a good Standard format. I found myself at the beginning of the year kind of a little, let's call it ho-hum about the game. When Standard became good, I was like, I played it for fun sometimes. Arena helped, and I was like, I really enjoy this. I kind of took it a little too, I wouldn't say too seriously, but I trained a lot for the Invitational, and I just found that Standard was able to hold my, playing it more often was able to hold my interest. And I just got to say, like, that really made the game fun for me again, just being able to do that and then playing a bunch of Arena, because it's so easy to knock out games on Arena. So I think Arena has a lot to do with me sticking around with the game. It's fantastic to have a good Standard format, to have good Arena, and to have a good community as a whole.
We hope you've had a great year. We've had a great year with you. Thank you for your support. Thank you for giving your time listening as often as you do to Tryhards. Oh, you brave soul. Enjoy the holidays. We'll see you again very soon.